listening to The Foundation of Wellness, a refreshing take on diet and lifestyle. With Jessica Dogert, a registered dietitian nutritionist, and Marisa Moon, a primal health coach.
Hi guys, my name is Jessica Dogert. I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and the voice behind Mindful Musings, a multifaceted food, wellness, and lifestyle journal launching in June of 2018. Home stretch, baby.
Wow, what's up? It's me, Marisa Moon, the primal health coach with a passion for ancestral health and traditional foods. You'll find my recipes at mylongevitykitchen.com. I love to learn from the wisdom of our ancient ancestors and then teach my health coaching clients how to adapt those lessons for modern life. And you know, Jessica and I, we spent years working together at High Vibe, this innovative paleo vegan juice bar in River North Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, we had so much fun making Facebook Live videos and YouTube videos together, didn't we, Marisa?
Awesome.
And that's why we decided to co-host this podcast, because we love to share our perspective on health and wellness. Today, we are chatting all about actionable ways to get your gut healthy. So what are the benefits of a healthy gut? You're going to have fewer stomach cramps, less gas and bloating, less cravings, fewer mood swings, fewer colds and flus, perfect pooping.
Yes, totally. You know, there's all those other things too we didn't even think about, like acne or skin irritations, itching. Right. It's kind of crazy how the gut is really linked to everything, which we covered a little bit in our last episode that was all about the gut and what a healthy or destructive gut is like, right? And you just mentioned perfect pooping.
Yes. Well, that's something people love to talk about.
Yeah. Perfect pooping was one of the biggest drivers for me to finally ask questions about how my body works, ask questions about nutrition, and conquer my non-celiac gluten sensitivity. And what I later figured out was a leaky gut. It's things like that when we kind of feel like we can't live with symptoms any longer that we're finally willing to do whatever it takes to heal from it. And that's why most people aren't really ready for this big change or don't really take their new diet seriously. It's like you have to believe that you can possibly change and live without those symptoms, and you have to be sick of living with them so you're really willing to do the work it takes.
Or I would even say, you know, symptoms like, oh, I have a stomach ache or stomach cramps here or there. You know, people think it's normal. However, we shouldn't really be feeling that way.
Yeah, it just kind of, I don't know how I realized it, but I just realized this is not normal. And until that time, it was probably normal my whole life. Like, my family, we all joke, like, someone's in the bathroom for a really long time.
Right.
Or it's just funny. Like, you just think it's just a way of life. But as soon as you get older, or I think even more so as a woman, if you're self-conscious or you feel unattractive or not so feminine anymore because you are dealing with these embarrassing symptoms, it should make you question. It should make you demand answers.
Right.
I don't know why it took me so long, but thank God.
Thank God. You're here now.
So. Yeah, girl, and I am healed.
So why don't we talk about avoiding certain food additives and perhaps medications, or even, you know, buying less packaged foods, or, you know, stopping to over-sanitize everything. You know, there's so much that we could talk about, you know, starting off with perfect pooping.
Yeah. Well, it's just kind of, we have to think of it like, these are the universal things that are going to wreak havoc in your gut, no matter who you are, okay? You just cannot deny it. And as we covered in the last episode, and you'll hear us say time and time again, if you want a strong immune system, if you want a strong brain, and if you want to have a symptom-free sort of life and resiliency against chronic disease, then you should care about all of these common things we're about to mention that are going to destroy your gut. And it starts with processed foods, okay? Processed foods are anything sold in a box, in a bag, in the freezer, on the shelf. Something with an ingredient list is a processed food. And most people are not reading the ingredient list.
Right. I think what I notice with my clients, the very first thing they look at and the very first thing that they're so concerned with is the nutrition facts. Oh my goodness, that has 20 grams of fat and that's 250 calories for, you know, four cookies or something mm-hmm. like that. But what matters most is that you're reading the ingredient list. I mean, mm-hmm. if it's something like potato chips, sea salt, coconut oil, like go for it. You know what I mean? But if it's something like potato chips and maybe maltodextrin and, you know, just a lot of yeah. things that you're unfamiliar with, that's a red flag. And that's like an absolutely no. Why would you want to put that in your mouth?
Yeah, a lot of food additives are actually destructive in the gut because they're breaking down the integrity of the gut wall. So what makes your gut strong against certain food sensitivities and weaknesses down the line, but also it kills off important bacteria and just negatively affects your immune system. And food additives could be anything like words you can't pronounce. In most cases, they definitely are. And they could even be sugar and definitely toxic oils. You know, we've been led to believe that oils like canola oil and soybean oil and corn oil are heart healthy, but we have been lied to. The stuff they have to do to turn those seeds into oils. Yes, I said seeds, okay? They're not vegetable oils like they claim to be. They're really made from seeds. And those oils are so damaged and rancid that they're causing all sorts of havoc and byproducts and destruction and inflammation in our entire body, but also in our gut.
What about glyphosate?
Well, glyphosate is a weed killer, okay? That's that stuff sold at Home Depot and all the home and garden shops called Roundup, okay? It started as something commercial, but residential people are using it too. But in this case, we're talking about commercial glyphosate, commercial Roundup weed killer, okay? Because it's being sprayed on grains, anything you name it. It's like wheat and barley and rye and oats. The reason they're spraying them on those plants is because they want to harvest them earlier. By killing the plant, it makes it release the seeds and dry up so that they can harvest the seeds faster instead of waiting for it to naturally dry up like a plant does when it's ready to shed its seeds. So now they're starting to see in scientific studies that the glyphosate is still in that grain, it's in the bread, it's in the products that they've made with it, it's even in the beer, and glyphosate in our intestinal tract is making your gut leaky immediately. You know, especially in the presence of gluten, by the way.
That reminds me of something I saw on Instagram. It was just a picture side by side of two strawberries. One was a conventional strawberry and one was an organic strawberry. And the organic strawberry ingredient list was just strawberries, whereas the conventional strawberry, it had a laundry list of all these toxins that it was sprayed with to grow.
Like 30 different chemicals, right?
Right. So it's like, think about, of course, we're talking glyphosate on grains and things like that, but think about all of those things that you're consuming, and here you are thinking you're just consuming a strawberry.
Yeah, sure, I mean, I bet you any money for people who say they don't care about organic, if you were there when the farmer was spraying the crops,
yeah,
and then he picked one off the plant and handed it to you and asked you if you want it, I bet you any money you wouldn't want that.
No thanks.
Yeah. The only reason that we act like we don't care is because it's out of sight, out of mind, and we are unfamiliar with it. We don't know what really goes on. Mm-hmm. But the reason we're talking about glyphosate today is because it's so damaging to the gut. So if you are someone who's eating grains or drinking beer, spend the extra money and buy organic, because in that case, they're not going to be spraying or desiccating these crops with glyphosate.
So what else is going to be really damaging to the gut? Food additives and medications, right? Like even over-the-counter anti-inflammatories like Tylenol and Advil?
Yeah, that's true. Anti-inflammatory medications are really damaging to the gut, and so are prescription medications. Our microbiome, the bacterial colonies and ecosystem in our gut, they really hate medications. Mm-hmm. So think about that sometimes when you're trying to heal from something. Is there any other alternative? Is there anything that you can do to maybe support a healthy gut without those medications? That would be really helpful.
Yeah. What about over-sanitizing everything? I think that's something that we're so used to doing. You know, I was actually in Whole Foods this morning getting groceries. I mean, I go grocery shopping like every single day. But I knew that we were doing this podcast today, and I knew that, you know, we had notes kind of put together. And right when I was in the checkout line, I saw antibacterial hand sanitizer. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my goodness, it is everywhere. Yeah. We're constantly sanitizing our bodies, just everything around us.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, marketers pitched this idea to us that we wanted to kill 99.9% of germs in our mouth with mouthwash and in our hand lotion now and our hand soaps and our cleaning products for our house. But really, this is just a misguided sales tactic that we're all suffering from. You know, on a global level, it's not just on a personal level. But when we're talking about our guts, they depend on micro exposures to certain bacteria, good and bad. And so if you're not, for instance, a little baby, if a little baby grows up in an overly sanitized environment, it's not getting these micro exposures that its immune system depends on to create a defense system. And so as adults, even these micro exposures that we would get from a little bit of germs on our dog that has not had a bath yet, or, you know, from the dog licking your face and even around your mouth, it's like that is just enough to arm your immune system to actually make you stronger in most cases. And so when we think about antibacterial hand soaps and antibacterial gels that we put on our hand, we're really stripping our skin of this layer that we need to protect us. Of course, hand washing is really important. I did a whole talk on this at Mambi, but it's incredible what you can do with just water or your own natural soap. And you can even make spray hand sanitizers with witch hazel and essential oils. So there are options. Just start thinking outside of the hand sanitizer box, because it might be doing more harm than good.
Yeah, and I mean, our obsession with cleanliness, like you said, it's actually making us sicker, right? And I think a product that I'm obsessed with is Mother Dirt. And Marisa and I both recently purchased it at PaleoFX this year at the end of April. It's this mist that just restores all this good bacteria to your skin. And I've been using it everywhere. Of course, you use it like under your armpits, but I've been putting it on my chest and even my face. And
it's a spray bacteria?
Yeah, isn't it? So it's like, you know how people pop a probiotic and like take all this good bacteria in their body and like have fermentation and like food and things like that? This is actually going on your body. So it's been clinically researched to just like reduce the dependence of products like deodorants and moisturizers and even makeup, which is so cool.
Yeah, those bacteria that are good do a lot of work to protect us. And that includes protecting us from smelly bacteria, bacteria that makes us stink, and protecting us from germs that are outside of us.
And it just makes sense, because our skin is just the largest organ and it's going to absorb whatever it is that we're putting onto our body. So we want to be putting good bacteria on our skin, just like we're actually ingesting in it too.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. A good point. Well, if we were going to move on from this, I think there's a lot more we need to talk about with food, Jessica.
Right. So really just determining personal food sensitivities or intolerances, right?
Yeah. Someone who wants to heal their gut, the most important thing that you got to do first is remove the offensive things that are wreaking havoc. So that includes all of those things we said in the beginning, like food additives and toxic oils. We didn't even mention smoking. Smoking's another obvious one. Beer and medications and non-organic grains. And anything that you are sensitive to is literally like firing ammunition inside your gut. There's no way that you can heal it with some of the things we're going to mention later if you keep firing at it.
Yeah, so what is a food sensitivity? By definition, it's going to be an immune system response to a food that the body believes is harmful. And then every time we consume that food, our immune system is compromised. And it's sad, because most of us have no idea what it is that we're even allergic to that's just adversely affecting our lives. I mean, if you're frequently feeling very bloated or blah or tired, or you have brain fog or something like that, it could be due to these five foods. These five foods account for 75% of all food allergic reactions, and that's going to be gluten, corn, soy, dairy, and eggs. A very common symptom is feeling tired or mentally foggy after eating, and I'm sure you've heard of the term food coma. Somehow it's become commonly accepted, and it's just this side effect of eating, and it's really unfortunate because food should be leaving us feeling vibrant and energized, and we shouldn't be feeling sluggish and tired after food.
Yeah, I mean, let's think about what a food sensitivity is actually doing to our immune system and to our gut, okay? Your immune system is going to react to a food that you're not supposed to have with inflammation. And inflammation can be something you don't even realize is going on, or it could be like external, like acne and itching and all kinds of bumps and who knows what. But when inflammation is happening inside your gut, it becomes an environment that the good gut bacteria don't like and the bad bacteria thrive in. And that leads to an imbalance where the gut bacteria that are bad are growing rapidly in numbers and the good bacteria are dying off. So not only are food sensitivities giving us obvious reactions that we may not enjoy, but if we keep ingesting them when we're trying to heal our gut, we're getting nowhere.
Right, so these harmful foods, they're leading to a leaky gut. And what we need to be doing is healing our leaky guts. And that's by sealing up the holes of your gut wall, the immune system, it could finally take a break. And like Marisa said, it could just quit producing the inflammation. And given a long enough break, the body is going to be able to switch from this like survival mode into healing mode and just start fixing tissue damage that was caused by all that chronic inflammation.
Yeah, and it only takes like 3 to 5 days, I think, for those cells to turn over on the walls of our intestines. So your gut lining can replenish pretty quickly, but it's important that you are removing anything that is offensive. And the best way to start on that track is with an elimination diet.
Yeah, there are so many different elimination diets, like a Whole30, Paleo, Low FODMAP, but I think one I want to quickly talk about is the Autoimmune Protocol, or the AIP diet, and that's because there are more than 50 million people with autoimmune conditions in the United States, and I will say that it's like one of the most restrictive diets out of them all, just because you're removing so many gut irritants that are causing inflammation. You know, it's not only grains and legumes and dairy, but it's also eggs and chocolate and coffee and nuts and seeds and nightshades and sugar alcohols. I mean, it's an exhausting list.
Well, it's important to mention because some people do need to take their paleo diet or their Whole30 diet to that next level, that AIP autoimmune protocol diet. But what you're doing here is you're trying to figure out which foods are causing destruction in your body or causing your immune system, like in an autoimmune disease, your immune system is firing at your own tissues because it thinks it is the cells of food that has passed through your intestinal wall because your gut is leaky. And so in many cases, it can be as simple as just getting rid of dairy or getting rid of gluten. In my case, I had to get rid of both of those and then transition to something called a low FODMAP diet, which we're going to get into in a little bit. But these diets are becoming popular for very significant and life-changing reasons. People are only finding solutions once they have the nerve to actually go the full distance. Yeah, I mean, I had to go from being gluten-free to being gluten-free and dairy-free to feeling like I really got to the bottom of it, but then wondering why every once in a while I had these embarrassing symptoms again. Mostly just unexplained gas, something that might even keep me up at night, you know? And I didn't even know where it was coming from. I'm eating this totally clean diet. And mostly paleo, I'm just so confused. And that's when I learned about FODMAPs, F-O-D-M-A-P. FODMAPs stand for the fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. Those long, confusing words are just names for different sugars and fibers that exist in foods. Is that right, Jess?
Right, so these sugars are just kind of fermenting in your gut, and that's just leading to gas and bloating.
Yeah, it really just depends on which bacteria are running the show inside your gut at that time. So it's not like you're necessarily unwell or you have a gut disorder, but you can react to certain foods that are high in these fermentable sugars and fibers where other people can enjoy them. Now, I should interject and say, this whole category food is packed with foods that we know are healthy, like asparagus and almonds and apples. And so when I was going through that, I was like, what the heck is going on? I couldn't figure it out. It's a giant class of foods, okay? Beans, onions, leeks, you name it. I was like, how could this be happening? Like, and I figured out it was anytime I had almonds with the skin still on, or like anything made with almonds or almond flour that wasn't blanched almonds and almond flour, I would have that reaction. And anytime I had too many onions, I would have that reaction. And it was just a whole adventure for me trying to figure that out.
So, Marissa, how long did you have to eliminate those foods for? And then when did you start to reintroduce to figure out, you know, oh, almonds were the issue for me?
Well, I really learned about low FODMAP. It's different than the other elimination diets because this is about understanding which quantity hits your threshold. Mm-hmm. So I can still eat almonds and asparagus and onions, but I had to know which food, like asparagus, I love. I wanted to eat an entire bundle of it just for myself. I enjoyed it. That was a major mistake, okay? So I learned so many different things about the low FODMAP diet, like the way you prepare the food has a big effect on it, and the way that how much of it you eat, if you ate it in conjunction with other high FODMAP foods. And so that is not easy to do on your own. I was working with a functional medicine dietitian at the time. She got me on the right start. And then I learned all about it, and I just kept going by myself. But I think even for our clients, going at that alone is not that easy.
It's difficult for us even. You know, I think elimination diets are really something that you have to focus on. And I know that a lot of our clients are so busy all the time. It's really nice to have someone just like as your sidekick helping you out with that.
And just giving you the answers. Some people just want the answers. Tell me what to do. I'll do it. I don't have time. Yeah. But really, when you're doing any of the other elimination diets Jessica mentioned, the Whole30 is wildly popular. Maybe you've already tried it. The autoimmune protocol and the paleo diet. The GAPS diet is the gut and psychology or physiology syndrome, really healing for the gut. But all of those come with a very particular reintroduction phase.
Which I think a lot of people kind of think, oh, I'm totally done. You know, I did Whole30 for 30 days and, you know, I'm just going to go back to my normal eating, whatever that normal eating was like for you.
But
it's like,
no.
You miss such an opportunity to heal your gut. You just go back to square one then if you don't reintroduce foods the right way.
It's so true. All of those benefits that you experience, if you don't learn from it, like which single food was causing those symptoms before, then you're back to square one less than a week after your Whole30 ends, and you just feel like you have to plan your next Whole30 because your life is only good when you're on the Whole30. But that's not how it has to be.
Right.
It just takes some patience, because if you would do the Whole30, for instance, and slowly reintroduce sweeteners and slowly reintroduce gluten and then a week later reintroduce dairy, you would learn so much about how your body reacts to those foods that you may never have to go on an elimination diet ever again.
And it's crazy because, you know, these diets are so individualized. I mean, Marissa, you and I could be eating the exact same foods all the time, yet you have a different reaction than me. You know, you may be fine with dairy, whereas I may not. It's like, it's crazy to think that, like, everything is so individualized. It's like, I wish I could give my clients like a cookie cutter, like one size fits all, but unfortunately it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I mean, the reintroduction phase after any elimination diet is not easy to do on your own without a coach, but if you are really sick of living with your symptoms, you can do it. You can even take it more slowly like I did. Like, I just started with gluten and dairy. And I didn't start with dairy right off the bat. I was hesitant to do it. But I learned that dairy has this similar molecular structure as gluten. And a lot of times when the proteins in dairy specifically called casein. And a lot of times when somebody's immune system is reacting to gluten, as long as your gut is leaky, your body is going to have the same reaction to casein that's a protein in dairy. So very often, people will have to eliminate them both and then slowly reintroduce them. And we could do a whole podcast on dairy. We probably will, because every single dairy product and preparation and fat content and sugar content and protein content affects people's food sensitivities in a dramatically different way. And so I had to learn by slowly playing around with those two food groups what I could or could not tolerate. Like someone with celiac disease can't even have a sip of a beer. They'd probably be hungover, like literally feel like these brain fog hangover feelings if they did. Or they might get this terrible gut. Yeah, they might get this terrible gut response. Or me, I could probably drink, now that my gut is healed, I could probably drink one beer. I'm just too afraid to be honest with you. I don't want to go through. I made that mistake way too many times thinking that I could just handle a little bit because I feel better. And then I'd be like curled up on the floor holding my stomach, crying, swearing I'd never eat again because my stomach cramps were so bad. And by the way, when I say the floor, I mean the bathroom tiles, because I would have to be really close to the toilet. It was horrific.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
If it's not one way, it's the other. But okay, so you adhere to this low FODMAP diet, which is very low fiber, right? And then let's say, for example, in a perfect world, you've healed your leaky gut. Something that I do recommend to my clients, like once they do have a healed leaky gut, is actually to encourage a high fiber intake. And the Institute of Medicine recommends that men get about 38 grams and then women get about 25 grams. And those numbers are like, oh my gosh, those mean nothing to me. But it's very easy to get like the recommended amount, because if you think about half of an avocado, that's 7 grams right there. Or if you think about, you know, adding a tablespoon of chia seeds to a smoothie or something like that, that's 5 grams right there. So there are so
basically any fruits and vegetables, you guys. That's exactly the thing. You have to start cooking with fruits and vegetables. You can't escape that is part of your diet. I don't care how busy you are. People want to say, I don't have the time or I don't have the money. You need to have one or the other if you want to get healthy. You have to give up some time or give up some money. Have somebody else make the vegetables for you. That's fine. Or you got to just spend a little bit of time going to the grocery store and actually buying vegetables in the produce section, not in the freezer section. Mm-hmm. Okay, not in cans. I mean, that doesn't taste good. That's why people don't like vegetables, because those suck.
Exactly. And I think you bring up such a good point, too. It's like, you know, do all of us have the time? No, but it's like we make time for what's like really important in our lives. And something like, you know, having this plant-based diet is so incredibly important. And like, we of course know the benefits, and that's why we do it all the time. But it's like, that's what we want for you guys too. We want you guys to get into the kitchen. I know, Marisa, your whole philosophy is all about, you know, making the kitchen fun again, or like cool again, or something like that.
I mean, let's think about this for a second. I can't even count on two hands the amount of clients that I have that say they hate cooking. And unanimously, they all agree when I say to them, are you any good at it? They say no. That's why they hate it, okay? I promise you that if you want to get healthy, all you have to do is practice cooking and you will get better. And then you won't hate it anymore. It's like this skill that's just built in that we all have innately. We are born with a connection with food. We've just lost it because we're so detached. None of us grow food. We don't even know the person who grows our food. We don't even know what the plant looks like before they pick the vegetable off of it.
I mean, but nowadays, our generation, especially like the millennials, it's like we come home from work and we can have food catered to us in 2 minutes flat.
That's great.
I mean, Uber Eats, you know?
Should do it. If you have the money
and
there is some place that is making food from scratch and you can get like vegetable stir fries, it's probably cooked in toxic oils. I'm just saying, almost any restaurant food is garbage.
It's true.
Unfortunately. But if you can buy those meal kits or ready-made meals, meal delivery services, that's the way to go if you have the money and you're short on time.
Oh, I actually meant like, you know, people come home from work and they have caviar or, you know, whatever that service
the
is.
Oh, what's it called?
Like
restaurant
Uber
delivery.
Eats. Yeah, literally. Like, so it's like we have food
Grubhub,
catered to us. So it's
that
like,
kind
why
of thing.
Would we spend 45 minutes cooking a delicious meal? You know?
Yeah, well, give yourself at least 30 days to tackle this gut healing protocol that you might be embarking on, because it's not worth it to be caught in this vicious cycle living with symptoms of this subpar life. Like, you deserve so much better, and your body is capable of living symptom-free. It's crazy that we think life is full of pain and suffering.
You know, and I think a lot of my clients are always like, you know, we just think we should be feeling, you know, bloated and blah, like, oh, that's just normal after eating. But, you know, when you really put it into perspective, it's like, I should be feeling amazing every hour of the day. It's
heck
like,
yeah,
you know, I shouldn't have that 3 p.m. slump. It's like, even if it doesn't matter if it's 9 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, like, I want to feel energetic all day long. And like, you can, and that's why we're here to help you.
Totally.
So let's talk about intermittent fasting a little bit. Here's what it is. It's going to be a pattern of eating where you eat during certain times and then you fast during others. So intermittent fasting, it's all about when you eat. A lot of people hear the word fast and they think that it's a plan about starving, but that is not the case. You're not really focused on eating less. You're really just trying to eat your meals in a shorter window of time. So it's not meant to be deprivation. It's really just about giving your body and especially your gut just a rest and reset. And there are so many benefits, like weight loss, it stimulates brain function, it boosts your immune system. But I think the biggest thing is the fact that it just rests your gut. There are so many different ways to do it. You know, I think what's really common is you eat within an 8-hour window and then you fast for about 16 hours. But I know myself, what I recommend to clients, and I know Marisa, you do too, is kind of like a 12 on, 12 off. It's really just a happy medium of where, of course, you eat during 12 hours and then you fast during another 12 hours. So think you stop eating dinner at 8 p.m. You don't eat again until 8 a.m. that morning.
Yeah, it really depends on the person, you guys, because for women who are trying to conceive or care to remain fertile, or depending on your energy needs, what types of medication you're taking, any sort of diseases that you might be battling, blood sugar issues, that's going to determine how long you can actually do these fasts. I mean, for women, 12 hours might be a great target time. I feel really good when I'm going 14 hours. But when it gets to 16 and up, it's really more optimized for a male's physiology. Right. So it depends on the person. But I think without a doubt across the board, everyone would agree that 12 hours is pretty standard, safe for everyone. Yeah. And your body needs that rest. It expects it.
Right. I mean, giving your body time and space without food, it's actually very healing, it's reparative, and your body, it could just do its own auto-clean mode, kind of just like an oven.
You know, it goes for the brain, too.
Yes.
The brain has its own cleaning system, you're storing memories, you're healing your joints, your muscles. I mean, your body's fighting cancer at that time, you're detoxifying. There's so much stuff happening when we sleep that without it, we really can't thrive.
Right, and speaking of sleep.
Yes. Sleep is so huge for gut repair. Most of us, when we're dealing with gut issues, we are living a stressful lifestyle. We're short on sleep. We feel restless, uncomfortable way too often. But sleep is one of the most important things when you're trying to heal from anything. When you want your immune system to be strong, or you want cells to turn over and repair themselves like we want in a leaky gut or a damaged gut, you have to sleep and get quality sleep.
You know, I know for a lot of people, including myself, you know, sometimes it's been a long day and like you haven't had dinner yet and perhaps you're eating dinner at 9:30 or 10 and then it's like, oh, it's already 10 o'clock. It's time to hit the hay, right? But that's probably the worst thing to do because now we're going to bed and we're not letting our body do its reparative mode. Instead, we're digesting all of that food. So there's just so much to take into consideration. And I know that we could talk about this in episodes to come, like just perfecting a sleep routine and just different sleep hacks and things like that.
Yeah, you know, it might be a good idea in an instance like that when you get home really late to go right to sleep and then eat right when you wake up, because then you're still getting that fasting window. And trust me, you're not going to be hungry in the middle of your sleep. If you are, you have blood sugar issues, and that is a sign that your blood sugar is dropping too low and it's not usually at a steady level. And so there are other concerns there. But you should be able to go to sleep on an empty stomach and actually wake up feeling pretty good. But if you're like most people, you're trying to cram in that last minute meal, it's usually going to disrupt your sleep.
Right. So besides sleep, I mean, let's talk about chronic stress. I know episode 2 for us was all about, you know, how to become more stress resilient today. But chronic stress is horrible for cortisol levels. And I mean, stress just causes so many health issues.
Oh my gosh.
Of course, it directly affects your gut.
Whew, forget about it. I mean, anyone with Crohn's disease or celiac disease, even ulcerative colitis, all these irritable bowel disorders, IBD, they will tell you that when they are stressed out, their symptoms are so exacerbated that they are full blown. Okay, so all of us might be experiencing that on some level, especially when we have a leaky gut or food sensitivities. When we're stressed out, we might be way more reactive than we normally would be. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. You wouldn't think like stress would affect you that directly.
It's really interesting because, you know, with all of my clients, I try to have them be really mindful when they're sitting down for a meal instead of perhaps, you know, all of us were, you know, just eating around the clock. We're eating right behind a computer. We're not even like being mindful of the food. But especially when you're stressed, your digestive system just turns off, which is so crazy. So it's like, you know, not only are you stressed, but you're not able to properly digest your food. So it's just like a double whammy of like, what is going on in your body? Your body's like screaming, help me.
Yeah, you really just got to do what you got to do. Like make some drastic changes in your life. Cut out some stressful relationships just for the time being while you're healing. And make some moves in your schedule. Tell people no because you're too busy. Sometimes it's just what you got to do. You got to cut things out and give yourself space because stress isn't going to go away on its own.
Yeah, we really encourage you guys to listen to episode 2, all about ways to just become more resilient to stress today. And speaking of episodes, stay tuned for next week's episode, all about supplements and support to heal your gut.
Yeah, we have so much more to give you guys. Thanks for sticking around because, as you can see, it's a complicated topic. You know, that's why we need support from other health advocates that can help us. And that's what Jessica and I are here to do for you. So we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.